The teenage years are a time when even the sweetest adolescent can morph into something unrecognisable, a little emotional time bomb. And the desire to fit in with friends can cause some pretty questionable behaviour. So how can parents approach their teenagers without overreacting? How best to talk to children about the tough issues or their risk-taking behaviour or their lack of motivation or self-control that can lead to bad decision-making? Michael Horton's a former teacher, registered psychologist, expert witness in the Family Court of Australia, and his latest book helps parents build better family relationships. Folks, 1-300-222-720. Got a little problem at home that needs just some manipulating. It might be the teenager. It might be your approach to that teenager. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello, Jeff. How are you doing?
Michael, I'm really interested in your book that this is not just a book about this is what kids do, this is how we should respond, but you also want us to look at how we do look at our kids and the way we treat their behaviours. How should we be taking on the challenge of the teenage years, Michael?
Well, look, I think the first thing to do is to trust that your teenager is getting more and more mature, Jeff. I know it's kind of sounds counterintuitive, but teenagers should be actually behaving better as they get older because their minds are getting stronger and they're organising things about themselves a bit better than when they were 10. But that said, sometimes they're going to cross the line, and parents need to know what to do when their teenage son or daughter does something that they think, that's not okay, and I need to have a chat with him.
Yeah, and I like the way you phrase it, that's not okay and I need to have a chat with him. That seems to be like a very measured response. I guess it's interesting today, we talk about the extremes of behaviours. We have the parents or human beings who tend to catastrophise everything. Oh no, she's done this. It's a slippery slope to heroin addiction. This is going to happen. And then there's the other kind of parent that goes, oh no, they're cool. You know, I want to be more like my kids. I want to start a very open relationship. So the answers lie in the middle, I guess, somewhere, don't they?
Well, look, indeed. The research is very clear on this. The kids who do best come from families where mum and dad are warm and firm. Warm means spending time with them, goof-off time, going out, walking the dog, whatever you need to do. And firm means that sometimes I need to be strict about a few things that really matter. There's not that many, as it turns out, but there are a number of things that teenagers need to know that mum and dad stand really firm about. And letting kids know that in a positive way, both in terms of family kind of values or virtues, you know, this is what we stand for in our family, but also in holding firm on certain behaviours that you think are inappropriate.
Tell me what you think really matters. Are there some things that are typical for all of us? You did mention we have things in our own families that will mean a lot to us, but are there some things that really matter that we should concentrate on?
Well, most of the time, as I say, what's going to be happening is that kids are going to be leading their own lives and becoming more independent as they get older. But there are things that they might do during the teenage years that you think, look, I really can't let that one go. I think parents face two types of problems. The first type is where your teenage son or daughter does something for the first time, like come home at 2 o'clock in the morning or finish off your drinks cabinet, and you go, whoa, I need to deal with that.
Yeah.
But the second type of problem is where something builds up over time and you let it go again, and then the third or fourth time you say, nah, I can't let this go anymore. They're things like acting increasingly more rudely, answering you back, hurting people in the family. You know, might be getting really angry and ripping into your little sister or brother, or where they place themselves at unacceptable risk, and you think, nah, I've got to talk to them about this.
The reality is, we do believe, as you say, that the 12-year-old is more mature than the 10-year-old, and the 16-year-old will be more mature than the 14-year-old and the 12-year-old, and that we do know that life gets better and things get understood. But we do fear these years because they are the risk-taking years, aren't they, Michael?
Well, they are. And look, we have every right as a mum or a dad to feel increasingly a bit anxious about the fact that our teenager is going to be pushing the boundaries and putting themselves into situations that they might not have done, well, they wouldn't have done as if they were 10-year-olds.
What advice would you give parents? And I know everyone's circumstances are different, But how do we best have these conversations? Because one thing I've learned when we've talked about these things over the years, having a conversation with your kid who you are not particularly happy with is no good having it when you are angry, because your judgment is off, and you may well make the point, but then once you start making it again and again and again, something I reckon I've done in my life with my kids, it means less to them. How do we get some framework around how we communicate with those kids?
Well, in the book, in Engaging Adolescents, I talk about planning, and it really doesn't take that much planning. And once you've done it half a dozen times, you can do it off the top of your head.
Yeah.
But it really comes down to being able to put a plan together, to present the problem to them in as factual terms as you can, to be able to describe it to them so that they don't get too unnecessarily head up. But if they do, knowing how to handle it. So it's about keeping a lid on your own emotion while you're doing it. Well, what pilots do really well is that in an emergency, the pilot up the front of the plane, he or she is going to be going through a process. If they get a fire on the engine in the engine on the wing, and they've got to keep flying the plane, which is themselves. And in terms of the analogy for parents, is got to fly yourself, but you've also got to manage the emergency. And if people do a little bit of following a process, which is what I outline in the book, they can actually stay anchored in the process as opposed to feeling attacked themselves.
Yeah, my guest is Michael Horton. He's written a new book called Engaging Adolescents, 1-300-222-720. If there's a question that Michael can help you with, we'd like to hear from you. Even in the... My children are 19 and 24, and I'm amazed that how many things have changed since their teenage years. And we know there are some fundamentals that have been true from generation to generation. Mm. But I'm already looking at my kids, and I'm almost grateful that I don't have a nine-year-old who is getting a mobile phone for the first time, because that mobile phone's a different device than when my kids were using them. How do you think parents should better understand what social media perhaps represents in the lives of kids these days?
Well, social media is built for teenagers, isn't it? I mean, it's a way of connecting with your friends, 24 hours of the day, if you let it. I think I have this saying in the technology courses that we teach and it goes like this: the internet is, or technology is, an invited guest, not an assumed resident at your house.
Yeah.
And to some extent, it's like anything. You've got to take a measured approach to it. And it's kind of like my father used to say, everything in moderation. And I think it's quite a good saying to actually pass on to parents of this day, which is to say that your kids shouldn't be on social media all the time. I mean, even people like Steve Jobs said he actually made attempts he made sure that his children weren't on the social media, and he invented the damn thing.
Yes.
You know, so in a sense, most of the time, kids are going to take their phones, for example. 85% of young people get their information through their smart device. But where you see that a smart device might be affecting their well-being, such as not letting them get the right amount of sleep at night time, then I think it's our job as mum or dad to stop that from happening. If my young person is not getting their at least 8.5 to 9.5 hours sleep a night, then clearly I think, well, it's time to say, I'll have the phone, and the phone can stay in the kitchen overnight.
Yeah.
Now, better that starts earlier than later.
Yeah, because and don't weaken parents.
Well, your kids' well-being is at stake, and their ability to tolerate frustration, not fret and not get anxious, is to some extent predicated or dependent on them having a well-rested prefrontal cortex, which has to go to sleep every day.
We're joined by the Reverend George Davies, who wants to make a point. George, good morning to you.
Oh, good day, folks. good stuff, but I'd like to hear more often in this sort of discussion about extended family. Dr. Don Edgar, director of the Institute of Family Studies for its first 16 years, at the end of his time said a key feature that emerged for him over that period was parent overload. And Margaret Mead, of course, non in 50s, talked about We need to find new forms of extended family and fail at our peril. So in the teen difficult years, and relationships with parents have lots of disclosure and non-disclosure points for the teenager, the aunt and uncle or substitute, if they're there, are more emotionally accessible and contribute significantly to the sense of well-being of the teenager, and then that, and can interpret something about what's happening with parents. Well, your dad functions this way because he had this hard time, and yes, such and such, and that's that kind of involvement in the process.
It's a really good point, Michael, because we often sense that there's detachment in extended family these days, but there is, as George says, there's a really important role for our other family members to play here if we're prepared to let them.
Oh, I look, it all comes down to the relationship. And I can remember when I was a young boy, a teenager, I had uncles and aunties who weren't afraid to show a bit of gumption and to say, Michael, what are you doing? You know, and I think that if we're lucky enough, as George says, to have extra parts of our family around who are willing and able to do that, then I think that's a great thing.
Let's move beyond the theoretical and deal with the real for Kim. Kim, good morning.
Good morning.
How can Michael assist you today, Kim?
Michael, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and she's sort of, she's pretty honest with a lot of different things with her and her friends, but my husband and I are suspecting that she's sneaking out of the house. We've actually seen some sort of handprints and footprints on the outside of the house where it's like, it's not brick, it's like just a asbestos sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we can see that. And I have sort of said to her, I'll make sure you close your window tonight and things like that, just, you know, obviously for safety. And noticing that the window is open in the morning and things like that, my husband wants just to directly say to her, look, you're getting out, you're sneaking out, what are you doing at night, in the middle of the night? And I'm sort of preempting the fact that she might just deny it and sort of pretend that, you know, she's not doing anything wrong when we're both really concerned that she is.
Yeah, they're two very, very relevant questions, Michael. You've heard those before.
Mm. Well, I think it is time for a chat. If you think that she's placing herself at unacceptable risk, which is what it sounds like, then it is time to say, look, we've noticed this happening. The window's open in the morning. There are footprints on the door, and describe what those are to her. And our interpretation of those facts is that you're going out, and putting yourself into a situation you may not be able to handle. So I think you can actually describe the various things that are happening to her and say, well, look, we need you to come to us, tell her what you want, if you need to go out and visit your friends. But if you're not getting the right amount of sleep, which you're not, if you're going out in the middle of the night, then we want to talk about that with you.
Kim, are you prepared to do it?
Yeah, my husband wanted to, but like I said, I was just worried that she would just be, you know, denying it to us and not actually listening to our concerns, is her safety, obviously.
So, yeah, and Michael, about that thing, though, of a 14-year-old daughter perhaps having to confront a truth that a parent knows, there's no harm in that, is there?
Oh, absolutely not. I think you're well within your rights to be able to say, this is what we're observing, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're noticing, and then to say, you know, all that adds up to us to be inappropriate behaviour. We want to talk with you about what you're doing, and this is what we'd like to see happen in the future.
Michael, we'd very much like to get you back on the program if we can find, if you can get to Perth, we'd love you to come in to the studio to talk to us. The book is Engaging Adolescence. That's psychologist Michael Horton.